He did not trust his voice not to betray him, so he simply shook his head.
Good. That's good.
They were approaching the rest area where he had parked his car. Shadow felt that he needed to say something.
I love you.
Or,
please don't go.
Or,
I'm sorry.
The kind of words you use to patch a conversation that had lurched without warning into the dark places. Instead, he said,
I'm not dead.
Maybe not. But are you sure you're alive?
Look at me.
That's not an answer. You'll know it when you are.
What now?
Well, I've seen you now. I'm going south again.
Back to Texas?
Somewhere warm. I don't care.
I have to wait here until my boss needs me.
That's not living.
She sighed, and then she smiled, the same smile that had been able to tug at his heart no matter how many times he saw it. Every time she smiled at him had been the first time all over again.
Will I see you again?
She looked up at him and she stopped smiling.
I guess so. In the end. Nothing's finished yet, is it?
No, it's not.
He went to put his arm around her, but she shook her head and pulled out of his reach. She sat down on the edge of a snow-covered picnic table, and she watched him drive away. Interlude. The war had begun, and nobody saw it. The storm was lowering, and nobody knew it. Wars are being fought all the time, with the world outside no more the wiser. The war on crime, the war on poverty, the war on drugs. This war was smaller than those, and huger, and more selective, but it was as real as any. A falling girder in Manhattan closed a street for 2 days. It killed 2 pedestrians, an Arabic taxi driver, and the taxi driver's passenger. A trucker in Denver was found dead in his home. The murder instrument, a rubber-gripped claw-headed hammer, had been left on the floor beside his corpse. His face was untouched, but the back of his head was completely destroyed, and several words in a foreign alphabet were written on the bathroom mirror in brown lipstick. In a postal sorting station in Phoenix, Arizona, a man went crazy, went postal, as they said on the evening news, and shot Terry the Troll Evanson, a morbidly obese, awkward man who lived alone in a trailer. Several other people in the sorting station were fired on, but only Evanson was killed. The man who fired the shots, first thought to be a disgruntled postal worker, was not caught and was never identified.
Frankly,
said Terry the Troll, Evanson's supervisor on the news at 5,
if anyone around here was going to go postal, we would have figured it was going to be the Troll. Okay worker, but a weird guy. I mean, you never can tell, huh?
That interview was cut when the segment was repeated later that evening. A community of 9 anchorites in Montana was found dead. Reporters speculated that it was a mass suicide, but soon the cause of death was reported as carbon monoxide poisoning from an elderly furnace. A lobster tank was smashed in the lobby of an Atlanta seafood restaurant. A crypt was defiled in the Key West graveyard. An Amtrak passenger train hit a UPS truck in Idaho, killing the driver of the truck. No passengers were seriously injured. It was still a Cold War at this stage, a phony war, nothing that could be truly won or lost. The wind stirred the branches of the tree. Sparks flew from the fire. The storm was coming. The Queen of Sheba, half-demon, they said, on her father's side, witch-woman, wise-woman, and queen, who ruled Sheba when Sheba was the richest land there ever was, when its spices and its gems and scented woods were taken by boat and camelback to the corners of the earth, who was worshipped even when she was alive, worshipped as a living goddess by the wisest of kings, stands on the sidewalk of Sunset Boulevard at 2 a.m., staring blankly out at the traffic like a slutty plastic bride on a black and neon wedding cake. She stands as if she owns the sidewalk and the night that surrounds her. When someone looks straight at her, her lips move as if she is talking to herself. When men in cars drive past her, she makes eye contact and she smiles. She ignores the men who walk past her on the sidewalk. It happens, people walk everywhere, even in West Hollywood. She ignores them, does her best to pretend that they are not there. It's been a long night. It's been a long week and a long 4,000 years. She is proud that she owes nothing to anyone. The other girls on the street, they have pimps, they have habits, they have children, they have people who take what they make. Not her. There is nothing holy left in her profession. Not anymore. A week ago, the rains began in Los Angeles, slicking the streets into road accidents, crumbling the mud from the hillsides and toppling houses into canyons, washing the world into the gutters and storm drains, drowning the bums and the homeless camped down in the concrete channel of the river. When the rains come in Los Angeles, they always take people by surprise. Bilquis has spent the last week inside. Unable to stand on the sidewalk, she is curled up in her bed in the room the color of raw liver, listening to the rain pattering on the metal box of the window air conditioner and placing personals on the internet. She has left her invitations on adultfriendfinder.com, laescorts.com, classyhollywoodbabes.com, has given herself an anonymous email address. She was proud of herself for negotiating the new territories, but remains nervous. She has spent a long time avoiding anything that might resemble a paper trail. She has never even taken a small ad in the back pages of the LA Weekly, preferring to pick out her own customers, defined by eye and smell and touch the ones who will worship her as she needs to be worshipped, the ones who will let her take them all the way. And it occurs to her now, standing and shivering on the street corner, for the late February rains have left off, but the chill they brought with them remains, that she has a habit as bad as that of the smack whores and the crack whores, and this distresses her, and her lips begin to move again. If you were close enough to her ruby-red lips, you would hear her say,
"I will rise now and go about the city in the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek the one I love."
She is whispering that, and she whispers,
"I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He said, this stature of mine is like to a palm tree, and my breasts like clusters of grapes. He said he would come to me then. I am my beloved's, and his desire is only toward me."
Bilquis hopes that the break in the rains will bring the Johns back. Most of the year she walks the 2 or 3 blocks on Sunset, enjoying the cool L.A. nights. Once a month, she pays off a man named Saba, an officer in the LAPD, who replaced another officer in the LAPD she used to pay off, who had vanished. That man's name was Jerry Lebeck, and his disappearance had been a mystery to the LAPD. He had become obsessed with Bilquis, had taken to following her on foot. And one afternoon, she woke, startled by a noise, and opened the door to her apartment, and found Jerry Lebeck in civilian clothes kneeling and swaying on the worn carpet, his head bowed, waiting for her to come out. The noise she had heard was the noise of his head, thumping against her door as he rocked back and forth on his knees. She stroked his hair and told him to come inside, and later she put his clothes into a black plastic garbage bag and tossed them into a dumpster behind a hotel several blocks away. His gun and his wallet she put into a grocery store bag. She poured used coffee grounds and food waste on top of them, folded the top of the bag, and dropped it into a trash can at a bus stop. She kept no souvenirs. The orange night sky glimmers to the west with distant lightning somewhere out to sea, and Bilquis knows that the rain will be starting soon. She sighs. She does not want to be caught in the rain. She will return to her apartment, she decides, and take a bath, and shave her legs. It seems to her she's always shaving her legs. And sleep.
"By night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth,"
she whispers.
"Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. My beloved is mine, and I am his."
She begins to walk up a side street, walking up the hillside to where her car is parked. Headlights come up behind her, slowing as they approach her, and she turns her face to the street and smiles. The smile freezes when she sees the car as a white stretch limo. Men in stretch limos want to fuck in stretch limos, not in the privacy of Bilquis's shrine. Still, it might be an investment, something for the future. A tinted window hums down and Bilquis walks over to the limo, smiling.
"Hey, honey. You looking for something?"
"Sweet loving," says a voice from the back of the stretch.
She peers inside as much as she can through the open window. She knows a girl who got into a stretch with 5 drunk football players and got hurt real bad, but there's only one John in there that she can see, and he looks kind of on the young side. He doesn't feel like a worshiper, but money. Good money that's passed from his hand to hers, that's an energy in its own right. Baraka, they called it, once on a time, which he can use, and frankly, these days, every little helps.